This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to GEICO. GEICO could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to GEICO.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Privilege revoked. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Thursday, August 16. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump has taken away the security clearance for former CIA Director John Brennan, a frequent critic of the president. Hear what both are saying.
A city park in Connecticut nearly turned into a trauma unit yesterday when dozens of people overdosed near Yale University.
Another delay for the Keystone XL pipeline. A judge in Montana has ordered an additional environmental review.
And you know companies track what you type when you're online, but you did not know, probably, that they also track how you type it.
So basically, as I started digging into bank security measures, I was startled to find out that it goes a little beyond what we sort of knew about, and that what a lot of them are doing is literally tracking the physical way that you type, swipe, click, pause, the pressure you apply on your smartphone screen, the cadence and rhythm you use when you interact with your devices, and things like that.
Stacy Cowley at the New York Times on how banks and retailers use deeper level technology to determine your ID and prevent fraud. President Trump has yanked the security clearance of former CIA director John Brennan. Mr. Trump cited Mr. Brennan as among those he held responsible for the investigation into Russian meddling in the election, which also is looking into whether there was collusion between the Trump campaign and the Kremlin. Mr. Trump has denied collusion, of course. White House spokeswoman Sarah Sanders read a statement from the president.
At this point in my administration, any benefits that senior officials might glean from consultations with Mr. Brennan are now outweighed by the risks posed by his erratic conduct and behavior.
Mr. Brennan was director of the CIA in the Obama administration and one of those who presented evidence to Mr. Trump shortly before his inauguration that Russia had interfered. The two men have sparred publicly for months. On Twitter, Mr. Brennan called the revocation of his clearance, quote, an effort by Mr. Trump to suppress freedom of speech and punish critics. The Keystone XL pipeline is back in the news. A federal judge in Montana has ordered the State Department to do a full environmental review of a revised route for the project, a move that could delay it. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
For more than a decade, there's been a fight against the $8 billion pipeline, which would carry crude from Canada to Nebraska along a 1,200-mile path. Yesterday, Judge Brian Morris ruled for the Indigenous Environmental Network and others, ordering the review of a revised route through Nebraska to supplement an earlier review. Supporting the project are Canadian oil producers, U.S. oil interests, and pipeline builders. TransCanada Corp., which wants to build Keystone XL, hopes to start preliminary work in Montana in coming months. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. The judge declined, by the way, a request to actually vacate a permit that was issued for the project in 2017 by the Trump administration. President Obama rejected the original pipeline proposal for things like environmental reasons. At least 71 people have overdosed from synthetic marijuana in Connecticut. Late yesterday, authorities said most of them happened on the New Haven Green, a downtown park near Yale University. Throughout the day, an official in the city told CBS that there were a total of 25 overdoses over a three-hour span, and that some overdoses were in multiples of four to six at a time. No deaths reported so far. New Haven Fire Chief John Alston.
There were some that were unconscious, some were nauseous, lethargic, some in respiratory duress.
Testing revealed that the drug in question is K2. It's a potent synthetic drug that induces a marijuana-like effect. Rick Fontana, the city's director of emergency operations, said calls started coming in just after 8 a.m. yesterday about possible overdoses at the park. Responding personnel found individuals suffering from, quote, a multitude of signs and symptoms ranging from vomiting, hallucinating, high blood pressure, and shallow breathing. Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Thursday. Abortion rights and civil liberties have so far dominated the fight over Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court, but his confirmation would mean a victory for another constituency, business. So says Lorraine Wohlert, White House reporter at Politico. Lorraine, what have you noticed?
So since John Roberts became Chief Justice, and he was joined shortly thereafter by Alito, there's been a business has had a very strong winning streak. There's a nonprofit progressive group took a look at cases that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce had weighed in on and tallied how many wins and losses they had. And it was a 70% win rate, which is a huge increase from the courts prior to the John Roberts court.
All right. So what are the expectations here if Brett Kavanaugh is appointed to the Supreme Court?
I mean, look, this guy has a very strong record, you know, very apparent record on regulatory issues. So this is a guy who his jurisprudence is that, you know, regulators should not have the power to basically, you know, create law, and the court should not have the power to create law. That's the job of Congress. And so, you know, his record has generally been to curtail the power of regulators and tell Congress to go back and fix things that they don't like the way they came out. So business groups, this has kind of long been business groups' complaint about the court and about regulators, that they overreach, they broaden the power of regulators on things like the environment, workplace safety, worker rights, and businesses saying, look, we think the court should just adhere to the statute of the law, and if people don't like the law, Congress should change it.
We're speaking with Lorraine Wohlert, White House reporter at Politico. So essentially, Mr. Kavanaugh is replacing or would be replacing Justice Anthony Kennedy. What does that mean for business?
So Kennedy, business liked Kennedy. He was generally a somewhat reliable vote for them. Kavanaugh will be even more reliable, right? So one of the tools that businesses use to influence the court, the high court, is to file briefs before the court takes a case. So they'll file a brief saying, you know, take this case, here's why it's important, or don't take this case. And usually they won't make that argument unless they think they can win, right? Just the business groups won't weigh in and urge the court to take a case that they're not sure they can win. With Kavanaugh, there are going to be more cases they can be pretty assured that they will win. Right, he's more likely, reliably, to come down on their side, and so they will be pushing for the court to hear more cases that affect them than they did in the past. So I think we can expect more business cases to come before the court because business groups will be pushing them there.
So, what do his opponents say? And I don't mean just politically, but maybe as this relates to business dealings.
So there are two schools of thought here. On one hand. Progressive groups are very worried about this because they think that laws should, and statutes should be interpreted in a way that goes to their intent. Like, for example, Lilly Ledbetter was a famous case. She sued for sexual discrimination against Goodyear after she learned that she had been underpaid relative to her male colleagues. It was pretty clear she was underpaid. There was no question about it. And she had been discriminated against. But her case was tossed out on a technicality because she had missed filing this before the statute of limitations. Mm. Well, the liberal groups were very unhappy about that. But what happened was Congress came back and fixed the law. And that's how business says this should work. You know, the courts should not be creating law, should not be creating policy, should not be interpreting policy. They should just be reading the letter of the law. That cuts both ways.
I thought it was interesting, too. You wrote in the piece that while conservative groups have chipped in millions of dollars to push Mr. Kavanaugh's confirmation, business lobbies are not promoting him as aggressively. How come?
This is interesting. So think about it. You know, you've got people marching in the streets opposing Kavanaugh's confirmation on social issues. Business doesn't want to get messed up in that. You know, I don't want, my brand to be boycotted because the Chamber of Commerce or the National Association of Manufacturers said nice things about Kavanaugh.
Thanks, Lorraine. Lorraine Wohlert, White House correspondent at Politico. 21 minutes after the hour on this morning, Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Florida President Trump has abruptly revoked the security clearance of ex-CIA Director John Brennan, an unprecedented act of retribution against a vocal critic. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders read a statement from the president.
At this point in my administration, any benefits that senior officials might glean from consultations with Mr. Brennan are now outweighed by the risks posed by his erratic conduct and behavior.
The reaction of Democratic Senator Mark Warner of Virginia.
I thought there was a bit of an irony that one of the reasons they cited for taking away Mr. Brennan's clearance was erratic behavior. I wonder if this White House has looked itself in the mirror on that very question.
Later, in an interview with the Wall Street Journal, Trump drew a direct connection between the Russia investigation and his decision, citing Brennan as among those he held responsible for the probe. Prosecutors told jurors in closing arguments that former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort lied to keep himself flush with cash for his luxurious lifestyle and lied some more to procure millions in bank loans when his income dropped off. In his defense, Manafort's attorneys told jurors to question the entirety of the prosecution's case as they sought to tarnish the credibility of Manafort's longtime protege and government witness, Rick Gates. Jurors will begin deliberations today. A nonprofit group that tracks clergy sexual abuse cases says only about 40 of the nearly 200 dioceses in the U.S. have released lists of priests accused of abusing children, and there have been only 9 investigations by a prosecutor or grand jury of a Catholic diocese or archdiocese in the U.S. The founder of BishopAccountability.org says it happens everywhere, so it's not really a question of where has it happened, but where has word gotten out. Los Angeles Dodgers fans trying to get to the game may soon be able to dodge LA's horrible traffic. Entrepreneur Elon Musk and his Boring Company has officially proposed to build a 3.5-mile tunnel under LA, running from one of 3 existing subway stations to Dodger Stadium, shuttling fans to games and concerts in less than 4 minutes in zero emissions and high-speed pods. The company says the dugout loop, which will be privately funded, would use pods that seat 8 to 16 people. The pods would travel on electric skates at speeds of 125 to 150 miles an hour.
It's insane.
Sounds like a fun way to go, doesn't it?
It certainly does. I don't want to be late, though, so I want like a high-def TV in that pod also.
Oh, that's coming. Don't worry about
just it. Just in case of pod traffic or whatever.
Don't worry
it might
about it.
Be.
It's coming.
By the way, you got to be careful when you pronounce his company, right? You don't want to say his Boring Company. It's the Boring Company. Or whatever.
It's a strange name for a company that's doing
I agree.
What in the world?
It's probably deliberate. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour. If you were offered a good job, would you move to a different city, even if your spouse had to stay put? More people are answering yes to that question, surprising perhaps. Here's how they make it work from Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenberger. Sue, what'd you look at?
The couples I looked at for this story were actually married. That's what the recent research, the best research, is focusing on still. But I was surprised, too, that we've seen a 44% increase since the year 2000 in married people living apart. And, of course, that's for all reasons. I mean, incarceration, nursing home residency. But it's largely because of jobs. People are working in separate cities or areas.
And people are just more willing to take a job in another city?
They are, and also couples are more comfortable with being apart. There's more emphasis on individuality in marriage these days. This is something sociologists have been writing about for a while. And also, technology makes it easier to stay in touch. So some of these couples really work hard at texting, video calling, emailing all day long so they don't feel like they're leading separate lives.
I wonder, this might be slightly off the beaten path, but I wonder how much of this happened, say, I don't know, between 2008 and, 10 or 12, when the economy was bad and people were just desperate to take a job no matter what.
That's a good observation. That is true. There was a jump in around the Great Recession in couples just living apart because they needed two full-time paychecks or benefits. And surprisingly, that practice didn't come back down. Again, the Great Recession seems to have caused some permanent shifts in the way we live and work.
Who's a couple you talked to that seems to be making this work?
Well, there were several, and I really enjoyed it. One couple had lived apart several times over the course of their long marriage of 26 years. He worked in the oil fields as an environmental specialist, and she worked at various jobs over the years. And they really made it work by talking, developing new communication skills, even figuring out how to argue at a distance, which is really hard.
Wow.
And then on weekends, they just immersed themselves in each other's lives, just really shutting work out of the weekend so they could really be together and also be with their kids.
Thanks, Sue. Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenbarger. She writes the Work and Family column. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for four straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in advanced manufacturing, cybersecurity, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan as the most improved state for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
Listen to us anytime on TuneIn at This Morning, America's First News with Gordon Deal, and on Stitcher at This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Welcome into Thursday, August 16. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Trump revokes the security clearance for former CIA Director Brennan. Wall Street Journal says the Trump administration is reversing an Obama policy that dictated how and when the U.S. can deploy cyber weapons. Dozens overdose in a Connecticut park. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says, quote, America was never that great. Want to feel old? Madonna is 60 today. And baseball's play of the week involves generosity by a couple of kids. That story in about 20 minutes. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 most improved state for business, Michigan. Contact MichiganBusiness.org today. The way you press, scroll, and type on a phone screen or keyboard can be as unique as your fingerprints or facial features. To fight fraud, a growing number of banks and merchants are tracking visitors' physical movements as they use websites and apps. Some use the technology only to weed out automated attacks and suspicious transactions, but others are going significantly further, amassing tens of millions of profiles that can identify customers by how they touch, hold, and tap their devices. Fascinating story by New York Times reporter Stacy Cowley. Stacy, what's up here?
So basically, as I started digging into bank security measures, I was startled, as I think many readers were, to find out that it goes a little beyond what we sort of knew about, and that what a lot of them are doing is literally tracking the physical way that you type, swipe, click, pause, the pressure you apply on your smartphone screen, the cadence and rhythm you use when you interact with your devices, and things like that. And using those through hundreds and hundreds of these data points that they refer to as behavioral biometrics, they can build up a profile of you and your movements and use it to figure out if you're really you or if you're a fraudster who's gotten hold of your credentials and is pretending to be you.
Wow. How popular right now are behavioral biometrics?
So one of the challenges of this is that the companies that use these things are not required to disclose it, and very few want to talk about it. It's certainly being used by a number of large banks and retailers. I generally found that it's been most popular overseas. Nordic countries have been really quick to embrace this. Some of Europe has been really using it. It's kind of just getting started here in the financial industry. I found that a number of banks were sort of piloting this or experimenting with it. A number of retailers, though, have already gone in with this. At least two of the top 10 largest retailers in the U.S. are using these technologies.
How about that? So another one of the items I think you pointed out was that some of this technology can even determine the angle at which you're holding your phone, and that matters for security officials.
That was what caught my eye about this, is that it's kind of spooky, the level of personalization they can get to. One of the things that really made this take off in the last couple of years is your smartphone is equipped with a whole bunch of sensors, and developers can get in and take advantage of those. So some of the things that they measure are the angle you're holding the phone, the pressure you're pushing on when you type on it. They're measuring things like the part of your finger you use. It turns out that that's a fairly individualized thing. How quickly you type buttons. Sort of every element of how you physically interact with your device, there's sensors in there that can let them track that.
And this all in the name of preventing fraud, I guess, for these companies?
Yes, and what's striking about this is that this is taking off because it is a pretty effective security technology. One of the things that really struck me is one retailer I was aware of, the fraud rates are huge for these guys. I mean, they're dealing with vast numbers of fraudulent login attempts. One high-end company found that 99% of its login attempts were fraudulent.
So for them, anything that can really cut through and help them identify when someone's using stolen credentials is really appealing.
Wow. We're speaking with Stacey Cowley, New York Times reporter. She's written a great piece on technology entitled Banks and Retailers Are Tracking How You Type, Swipe, and Tap. It might be the speed at which you type characters. It might be even where on the keyboard. Do you use the side buttons or the buttons along the top? How fast do you type? The angle you hold your phone? What about the accuracy of catching fraudsters?
Oh, that was the other thing, is that a lot of these technologies are extremely accurate. The companies generally say they're looking at accuracy rates in the 98 to 99% range. And, of course, a lot of this is self-reported because, as I said, this is not transparent. There isn't a lot of, like, peer review on these sorts of things. But certainly the customer companies that I spoke to said, yeah, they're finding that these technologies work pretty well. That's why there's growing interest in adopting them.
Explain, I guess, that one guy who was a Royal or is a Royal Bank of Scotland customer and what it picked up when it was not him who logged in?
Yep. So the Royal Bank of Scotland is one of the few banks that's very public about its use of this technology. They were quite happy to speak about it and the results they've seen. And they had one particularly striking case they described where it was a wealthy customer. Someone had fraudulently obtained his credentials and logged into the account with his login and his password. And the system detected some anomalies in what this person was doing. It found that the person was typing on the side pad on the numerical keyboard when typically this customer used the top row. Another thing was he was using his mouse in ways that the customer never had before. So using those, the system kind of picked up, hey, something's awry here, and their fraud protections kicked in. They were able to block this visitor from doing anything with his account. And when they later dug in and sent their forensic team to figure out what had happened, they found that someone had logged in and tried to set up a new payee and transfer a seven-figure sum. So this was an example that their executive cited to me as saying, hey, you know, this is a really unusually dramatic and blatant one, but this is an example of the kind of thing that this technology can stop.
Thanks, Stacey. Stacey Cowley, reporter at the New York Times. She quotes, by the way, an expert in her story who says, quote, the identity is the ultimate digital currency, and it's being weaponized at an industrial scale. It's 19 minutes now in front of the hour. We have arrived at that very special time of the week known as Friday Eve.
Yeah.
Glad you're with it. What does that mean? Yeah.
Sorry.
It's a sarcastic and cynical comment. That's a snarky...
Well, oh, so you're the only one who can do cynicism and sarcasm?
Yes.
Is that the deal? I'm
yes.
not allowed? Okay,
this is
good.
A monopoly.
All right,
yeah.
All right, good. I'm glad we got those rules straight after, you know, 12 years together.
Beyond the headlines. This morning's Mike Gavin here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, here's proof that you never know when something you lost might turn up. Nearly three decades ago, a 14-year-old girl in the United Kingdom got hit in the eye during a game of badminton and lost her contact lens. No big deal, right? Well, 28 years later, doctors found the missing contact embedded in a cyst in her left eyelid. According to CBS News, the woman, now 42 years old, visited an ophthalmologist recently for what she thought was an unrelated problem. Her left eyelid had been swollen and drooping for about 6 months, and doctors could feel a small lump under the skin. An MRI revealed a well-defined cyst just above her left eye. Once the cyst was removed, however, it was revealed an extremely fragile hard contact lens was inside. The woman couldn't immediately recall how the contact lens got there or how long it had been there, but then her mother remembered that the woman had been hit in the eye 28 years earlier during that game of badminton and lost the lens. After that, she never wore hard contact lenses again.
Wow.
I remember that when hard contact lenses were big, and it seemed like a scary proposition, putting something like that into your eye. Probably why we don't wear them anymore.
I can remember... when I was young, you'd hear the occasional story of soccer players who would head a soccer ball.
Yeah.
And one might pop out.
Yes.
One of those type of things.
Which is almost kind of the best case scenario, that it pops out.
Yes.
Instead of going in like it did in this case.
Yeah. Well, so let's assume that in the UK, like us, they may get annual eye exams.
Right.
So for 28 years...
Yeah.
Nobody ever picked up that there was something stuck in this woman's eyelid. And again, may not have formed a cyst or created something, but they never saw that.
Yeah. I guess that wasn't on the eye chart. I don't know.
Wow.
Right.
If you can still read the letter E, it doesn't matter if you have some sort of lump on your eyelid.
Exactly.
Yeah. Dismissed.
All is well. Nothing to see here. And thieves in Georgia, Gordon, must have been craving a savory snack or perhaps just wanting to stock their dorm room for the upcoming semester after they made off with nearly $100,000 worth of ramen noodles. According to local TV reports, a trailer full of the noodles was parked outside of a Fayetteville, Georgia gas station when it was stolen between July 25th and August 1st. Police say the driver had parked the tractor-trailer on July 25th after receiving permission from the owner of the gas station to leave it there for several days. The driver later returned to the location on August 1st to find the carbohydrate-filled vehicle missing.
Wow. You know, a lot of people bash ramen noodles.
Yes.
Right? It has TBHQ, I think, which is a byproduct from the petroleum industry.
Speaking of eye charts.
Yeah. But if you're low on things like sodium or calories or saturated fat,
I mean, come on.
This is your meal.
Some people are deficient in those things.
That's right.
If you need it quickly, that's the place to go. That truckload right there.
Thank you, Mike. It's 13 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Hey, glad you're with us. Welcome aboard. Colleges across the country are teaching students, parents, and alumni how to talk politics without being polarizing and nasty. The Wall Street Journal says the new Project on Civil Discourse, for example, at American University, will coordinate discussions led by students through classes, dorms, and clubs. Students will reflect on their debate styles and talk through hypotheticals like whether to engage or kick out people who say hateful things at parties. Wake Forest University is using dinner parties for 10 to 16 people at a time. After pilot sessions, it's aiming to get 1,000 undergrads and another 2,000 parents and alums to the dinner table this school year. With schools criticized for either coddling oversensitive young adults or for allowing extremists to spew hate, universities including Butler, Tufts, and Duquesne are working to improve civil discourse. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
President Trump is linking his decision to revoke the security clearance of former CIA Director John Brennan to the special counsel's investigation into Russian election meddling. Trump tells the Wall Street Journal that his decision stems from frustrations with the ongoing investigation that touches on potential collusion with his campaign. Democratic Senator Mark Warner of Virginia.
These people were being singled out to have either their clearances revoked or in the process of being revoked. To me, smacks of Nixonian-type practices of trying to silence anyone who's willing to criticize this president.
Trump told the Journal, "I call it the rigged witch hunt, a sham, and these people led it, so I think it's something that had to be done." The nation's newsrooms are pushing back against President Trump with a coordinated series of newspaper editorials condemning his attacks on fake news and suggestion that journalists are the enemy. The Boston Globe invited newspapers across the country to stand up for the press with editorials today, and nearly 350 news organizations are participating. The Chicago Sun-Times says it believes most Americans know that Trump is talking nonsense. More than 70 people have overdosed in or around a historic Connecticut park near the Yale University campus after receiving what authorities believe was synthetic marijuana laced with the powerful opioid fentanyl. Although there have been no deaths, at least two people suffered life-threatening symptoms. New Haven Fire Chief John Alton says some people were nauseous or lethargic.
We received multiple calls on the green for persons experiencing overdose symptoms, but also being passed out on the ground.
At least one person has been arrested in connection with the case. For the first time in recent decades, life expectancy across high-income countries is declining, and the pattern is even more dramatic in the U.S. Researchers from USC say it's striking that they saw so many high-income countries simultaneously experience life expectancy declines in 1 year. In contrast to the other higher-income countries, declines in life expectancy in the U.S. were because more people were dying in their 20s and 30s. Researchers suggest the ongoing opioid epidemic may be acting as a primary driver in this decline.
It's really incredible.
It's bad.
I mean, like, it's so bad that it's dragging down the age of life expectancy.
Right.
That's how pronounced the opioid crisis is.
Exactly.
Man, thank you, Jen. 6 minutes in front of the hour. Major League Baseball's play of the week happened in Detroit, but it wasn't on the field. It happened in the stands. A routine foul ball Tuesday night at the Tigers game became anything but when a 10-year-old named Travis Blackwell caught the ball in his glove, then decided to give it to an even younger fan, 7-year-old Michael Ogden. He told CBS News he wanted to give the ball to Michael because that day was his birthday. Why would he give away such a prize souvenir? He said that a couple of years ago, he went to a minor league game and got a foul ball from an adult he didn't know who had caught one, and the experience made his day. That's why he wanted to share the love. But it doesn't end there. There's a third link in this chain. So the 7-year-old, who was given the ball Tuesday, eventually caught one of his own down the third base line as it rolled off some netting. What did he do? Turned around and gave it to a little girl who was sitting behind him. It was the first baseball she ever had. The boys call this a line of awesomeness. Hard to disagree. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.